I hope everyone had a nice turkey day. Today we're talking to Tyson, who founded the company On Trajectory. He is a member of the FIRE community who saw a need for projecting out the date with which you can retire. So he used his skills to create something amazing for the community. So we're so excited to share Tyson's life story with you, as well as at the end of the episode, talk a little bit about On Trajectory. Let's get into the episode.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Welcome to another episode of Fire Drill Podcast. Today's guest is Tyson. Welcome to the show, Tyson.
Glad to be here.
And of course, I could not do this without my amazing co-host, Jay. What up, Jay?
Hello.
How's the weather in Seattle?
Gray.
Ugh. Okay, we're just going to pretend that we asked that question for the next, you know, like 6 months, because the answer is not going
to
change.
Sounds good to me.
So, Tyson, tell us a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, love to. So, I am a financially independent small business owner who has had a love affair with trying to figure out where I'm going for a long time. I started my first little business when I was 13 years old. I had a snowball stand. Depending on where you're from in the country, snowballs are either a big thing or they're not. I happen to live in Maryland. So the summer of my 13th year, I created a snowball stand, worked all summer, had no idea that working for 6, 7, 8 hours a day was so hard. 13-year-old kid trying to sit in a snowball stand for 8 hours was just brutal. But at the end of it, I was able to buy my first computer that summer and taught myself how to program and have been in and out of IT ever since. I actually have a degree in philosophy and in English because when I was in college, I decided that I wanted to be more artistic leaning. But when I got out of college, that artistry led to no jobs, zero jobs, and I went back to IT and worked the next 20, 25 years as an IT consultant before finally starting another startup.
So when you talk about snowball stands, you're not like in the middle of winter, like forming snowballs in your yard and then selling them to kids to have snowball fights. These are like the slushy, like icy,
those are the
shaved
things.
Ice things.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's an amazing subculture of snowballs. There's crushed ice versus shaved ice. The way that you pack it, if you put the flavor halfway through or if you don't put in any flavor halfway through, it's really an art form.
Tyson, were you ever a professor?
Yes, I actually do teach software engineering at Towson University, and I've also taught philosophy at Towson.
Okay, the reason I'm asking is because I just Googled you, and you have a really high rating on ratemyprofessors.com.
Oh, that is heartwarming. Thank you.
Wait, come on. We got to ask, what are the chili factor?
The chili factor?
Jay, does it stay on there?
Oh, no, I don't know. It doesn't have the chili anymore. Well, it has a smiley face for him. Rating awesome. One of my favorite professors at Towson. Chill professor, chill class, would definitely take again. Best teacher ever, ! So interesting. Aww. Look forward to the class every
God.
Week.
This is pretty good. This is news to me. I'm going to Google myself.
Yeah.
That's great.
So back when I was in college, they had the chilies and you could rate your professor on how attractive they were.
Oh.
And so I just wanted to see what your students thought of that. But apparently, Rate My Professor removed that.
Yeah, they're now more professional.
I am so glad they removed that.
Yeah. It's funny. So I'm sorry that I'm really good at stalking people on the internet, but we just want to welcome you. Congrats. Your students like you.
Great. Great to know. Everyone's getting an A this semester.
The only time I ever got an A in class is when that happened. No, I'm just kidding. I got A's all the time. Okay. I had no idea that there was so much controversy within the frozen ice flavored treat world.
Oh, I didn't even get into marshmallow toppings and chocolate toppings.
We don't have time to get into that, but maybe some other time we can talk about the intricacies of the topping frozen treat world.
All right, back to finance.
Okay, so you had this successful snowball stand, and what did you do with all the money that you got?
Right. So this is 1981, and I made $500. So I had a partner. So he and I would work the stand together. We'd cover each other. We made $1,000 that summer. So we split the money.
Pretty good pocket change for a 13-year-old.
13-year-old in 1981. I didn't even check what the inflation-adjusted numbers are on that. But I was able to buy a TRS-80. Any middle-aged people out there will know that this was Radio Shack's attempt at a personal computer. It was not the same power as the IBM PC or the Apple II that was out at that time. But it was enough for me to teach myself BASIC and start programming. And that was something that I carried on for the rest of my life.
So In other words, $1,000 in 1981 is equivalent in purchasing power to $2,771.11 in 2018. Yeah, almost $1,500 worth of money for a 13-year-old. Yeah, that's really good summer. So you taught yourself basic, which I don't even want to think about having to learn. And then you kind of leverage that into a career, right?
Right. Well, I leveraged it into a career when it turned out that my degree in English with a specialization in writing and a degree in philosophy was not really the moneymaker that I thought it might be. I had originally intended to stay in school, get my PhD, and teach. But what happened was in my junior year of college, I went abroad, was invited to a symposium in Greece, and I gave a paper, and I was surrounded by professional academics. And I quickly realized that if that was what my life was going to be like, if that was the high point of my life was, now going to Greece and presenting a paper was fabulous, absolutely great. But the topics of conversation and the politics and the atmosphere just was definitely not for me. It was too much in the weeds. It was not real life enough. It wasn't applying. I was interested in philosophy because I was interested in applying the lessons to real life, the real application of deep thinking. And there was none of that. They didn't do any of that. So I had to go back to something more professional. And since I already knew how to program, I found a job as a programmer.
So you leveraged that into a programmer, which, what year was that?
Wow. So I left a big part out of my life story. I actually joined the Army when I was 19 years old, and I was a helicopter pilot during the first Gulf War.
I like how you just casually forgot the fact that you were a helicopter pilot.
Well, it just didn't seem pertinent at the time of telling. So I ended up not going to college until I was 24 years old, and I didn't graduate until I was 28. So I had joined the Army for the GI Bill. I came from very, very middle class, lower middle class home. This was why I had to have the snowball stand, because I wanted a computer and my parents couldn't buy it. And I wanted a high-end bike. This was the years that BMX bicycles first started coming out, were very popular. Anything I wanted, I had to buy myself. And so that was what necessitated the snowball stand. So anyway, back to the college. I needed the GI Bill to pay for school. And I was lucky enough to be able to go directly from high school to flight school. It was a program the Army had back in those days. I don't know if they have it anymore. And so I spent 4 years as a helicopter pilot. I was stationed in Korea, Germany, as I said, the first Gulf War. So I was in Iraq and Saudi during that time. And so when I got out and finally went to college, I didn't graduate college until 1996, exactly 10 years after I graduated high school. So then at that point, that's when I started looking for the IT career.
So 1996, pretty decent time to become a programmer right before the dot-com boom. So I imagine you did well at that.
Yes, those were great years. I started coding for a small consulting company in Baltimore, and I worked for them up until this year.
Did you graduate debt-free?
Yes. So the GI Bill, the way it works is you pay for a semester of school, and then they continually write you checks every month until your funds are exhausted. So by the time I ended up going to college, my parents were doing a little bit better. My mom was a waitress. My dad was a Baltimore County police officer. So not big salaries, but they had managed to sort of put some money away. So what would happen is my mom would pay for the semester, and then I would work. And between work and then the GI Bill paying me back, I could support myself and ended up getting through college between the two debt-free. Yes.
So where does your money journey in terms of this whole financial independence thing start? Because a lot of people, they have debt and that's what originally motivates them to look into this. What motivated you?
So as Gwen mentioned, that 1996, when I entered the workforce, this was a hot time for the market. It seemed like everybody was just making a ton of money in the stock market and everyone was talking about retiring at 45 and 50, but not because they did anything specific, not because they made specific life choices to reach financial independence, just everyone was making a lot of money in the market. And I wanted to have that as well, but I wanted to actually understand how that might look. What would I need to be able to pull the trigger at 45 or 50 and quit my day job? And what I did is I went out and started looking at tools. I mean, the internet wasn't as mature as it is today, but there was certainly a lot of stuff out there. And I used Microsoft Money in the early days. And that would let you set like a 3-year plan. But anything more than 3 years, you know, you had to use some sort of calculator. I actually built my first sort of savings calculator during those years, during the late 90s. I was investing in the stock market. I was making forward looks at my future. And I was convinced, absolutely convinced, I would be fully financially independent and have no issues by the time I was 45. However, in the year 2000 or 2001, well, the bubble burst in 2000. And then after 9/11, the market also took another tank. It was brutal. So all my best laid plans were shattered. And that was where, during that time, writing those tools and thinking about the future, I forget the exact question you asked me, Jay, but it was something along those lines.
I guess for those of us in the FIRE community, sometimes it's cool to hear the what was the hook for you? Like, did you read the shockingly simple math behind early retirement, the article that Mr. Money Mustache wrote, and you're just like, whoa, mind blown, like some of us? Or was it a different path?
Well, it was a more independent path. As I said, I don't think back in the late 90s that the community was anywhere near, you know, where it is now. I mean, there is a community. You can go out and use the term FIRE or financial independence and get a wealth of information. Back then, I don't think Mr. Money Mustache was even blogging back then. So for me, it was all about just looking around, seeing people being successful, but not trusting my success to fate. I wanted to know. I wanted to really understand the math and where I could eject from the day job. Like a lot of people, I was not happy working in an office. And even today, if you browse the financial independence subreddit, you'll see posts weekly, you know, I'm only interested in FIRE because I hate my job, or I'm working my first year and I hate my job. How long do I have to keep doing this for? I probably had similar attitudes. It was just a dissatisfaction for the daily day job. And I wanted to specifically know to the dollar and to the date when I could cut loose and be financially independent.
Now, see, that's interesting because I got started, like I really went gung-ho on FIRE when I started out working because, yeah, that transition from college to work life sucked a lot. But I like really went gung-ho when I had a job that I absolutely hated. My coworkers were toxic. The work was not anything that I enjoyed doing. And I just could not wait to get out of there. And so that's when I like started really ramping up my stuff. So I get it totally, because that having an awful job is a powerful motivator to change your life.
And it's totally a thing. There was a Gallup poll last year. 51% of workers are disengaged from their job, meaning that they show up, but that's all they're doing. They're not engaged in their work. Another statistic, over 70% of people don't like their job. So that means 30% of us are going to jobs that we like or enjoy. Those are staggering statistics.
Yeah, Jay, what was it like when you didn't like your job, the last one that you had?
I remember waking up and starting to sweat at 7:30 in the morning and then deciding that I shouldn't be having coffee because it only amplifies my emotions. So yeah, that's what it was like. It was tough. But now I love my job. So anyone who feels stuck, I feel like they should try to find another path out and around.
And I could not agree more. In fact, you know, we're talking about being unhappy and having that uncertainty. You know, how much longer am I going to have to keep doing this thing? People hate uncertainty. When I was looking up those statistics about hating your job, I came across a couple of really interesting studies about the effects of not knowing, the effects of uncertainty on our psyche. And there's some pretty famous experiments they did back in the 50s. People would rather receive an electric shock when they know it's coming versus not know it's coming. So in other words, if I'm going to get an electric shock, I want to know when that electric shock is coming. Not knowing, having uncertainty in your life and just something that's randomly going to happen is far more unsettling. And I think when we are, you know, are thinking about financial independence or how much longer do I have to do this job, that's like an electric shock that's randomly hitting you because you don't know when you can stop doing it. It's just terrible.
So how would somebody go about getting a little bit more certainty back in their life?
Right. I mean, you know, obviously there's lots of ways. There's spreadsheets, right? There's tools that help you. There's tools that I have been developing my whole life. But it's the act of making a plan. Now, for some people, the act of making a plan is just as horrible as not knowing. But in that same study that I mentioned about the electric shock therapy, So some people wanted to know when it was going to come. Some people didn't want to know. And as I said, by far, the larger community were people that wanted to know when the shock was going to happen. For the folks that knew when the shock was going to happen, if they faced the shock, if they said, okay, it's coming in 3, 2, 1, boom, I'm facing the shock, I've received the shock, now I can wait another 20 minutes or whatever until the next shock comes. Those people, as opposed to the people that said, okay, the shock is coming in 10 seconds, let me distract myself. Oh, look at that light over there. Or, oh, I'm going to clap my hands vigorously until the shock is over. Or some sort of distraction technique. When they measured these stress levels in folks, because you know there's hormones that are released when you're under stress. When they measured the stress levels in people's blood, the people that actually faced their shock on time, knowing it was going to happen, had far less stress than people that tried to distract themselves. So what that means is if you make a plan, and again, using whatever technique you want to, yes, it's painful to face that, to make that plan, to know, hey, in order to reach this goal, to be financially independent by whatever age I want, or just to make sure that I have money for, you know, until age X, whatever X is, the people that face that shock and do that work are far happier, will be far happier in their lives. Even if you've got to go to that job you hate every day, at least if you know I'm doing this for 5 years or I'm doing this for 7 years, you suddenly become happier. You become happier just knowing when it's going to be over.
I can kind of understand that. I don't like question marks. When I can put a period instead of a question mark, I just feel better.
Yeah, and that's totally true. Like knowing that I was only in that awful job for 18 months really, really helped me get through that, because I can suffer through anything for a limited amount of time. It's not forever. It's just a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just knowing and choosing to face it. That's another big thing psychologically. Choosing to face something versus distracting yourself or running away from it or being unsure about it. You can face the same awful thing so much easier just by making the psychological shift, the mindset that, yeah, I'm going to do it.
Do you have any examples in your own life of when you've had to use this mindset shift?
Oh, yeah. So I mentioned about the Gulf War back in the 90s. So I was a helicopter pilot. I was stationed in Germany. I was 21 years old, had a lot of my life ahead of me, hadn't even gone to college yet. And Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait, right? And so, you know, most of all the troops that went were coming from Europe. I was in Germany at the time. And the unit that I was in got told that we're not going. And so in my head, I'm like, wow, I'm so glad I'm not going. That totally would have sucked. I would have been in a combat zone. I would have been sleeping in a tent in the desert for months on end. And I don't even, you know, this war is definitely about oil. And I wasn't super political, but, you know, the war was definitely about oil. And didn't feel like a just cause. And all those things were running through my head. I was so happy that I wasn't going to go. A week later, turns out that, yes, my unit is not going, but...
But you are.
Exactly. But a couple of other units that were on the same base were short pilots. And they could only ship out if they had a full cadre of pilots. So they asked to borrow 2 pilots from my unit. And the way they chose... whoever were the newest additions to the unit.
Oh,
and
that's so rude.
I'd only been in the unit for about 2 months. And so I was the absolute lowest guy on the totem pole and found out that I was leaving. Now, here's what happened. I told you how happy I was when I found out I wasn't going. When I found out I was going, something clicked in my brain and said, you're going to get combat pay. You're going to go do things that very few people ever get to do. You're going to fly a military helicopter in a combat zone. You're going to be fighting in a war where, you know, we've got a technological advantage. You're going to be defending the rights of the people of Kuwait who just got trampled by their much larger, very aggressive neighbor. All of a sudden, making that shift of choosing to see the aggression in a different light, I couldn't wait to go. I was like, this is going to be great. I'm going to experience things that very few people do. I'm going to have stories to tell forever. I can't wait. You know, in 20 years, I'm going to be on a podcast. I'm going to have to tell this story to somebody. It was, I got super excited. I couldn't wait to leave. It was so bizarre. You know, adopting the mindset of I'm going to face and do this thing can take the stress right away.
Yeah, see, I thought it was really interesting because the reason that I got out of being in the military was because I didn't go anywhere. And then, of course, you know, the year after I got out, they all got deployed all over the world. So go figure.
Gwen, I didn't know that you were in the military.
Yeah, I was in the Air Force, in the Air National Guard.
Oh, when?
For 6 years, 2009 to 2015.
Wow. Okay. Well, we have that too.
Yeah. Got all sorts of things in common. Yes, it's funny how just looking at things in a different light makes things a lot better, even if your situation hasn't changed.
That's right. Even if the situation's not changed.
So Tyson, now when you think about your personal financial independence journey, and it'd be interesting to talk about what your goals are regarding that. Can we talk a little bit about the mindset that you have today? And I think a lot of people may be able to relate to that because we're all on this FIRE journey together.
Right. Yeah. The mindset, it's so interesting when it goes to, you know, shifting from combat to money mindset. I live pretty frugally. If there's something that I really want, I'll do a little research. I'll make sure I get the best value or best deal that I can. But I tend to I don't suffer. Let's put it that way. However, very small things like bringing my lunch to work or making choices in daily life that are a frugal choice, adopting that mindset, it has made me able to become financially independent without actually focusing on doing it. It was, you know, I had a salary, my wife has a salary, we have two small children. But at the same time, just by keeping that frugal mindset that I'm going to choose to just go with the less expensive option, you don't have to make yourself suffer and you can get where you're going a lot faster.
Yeah, that's true. I needed a new winter coat because I was facing the prospect of a Minnesota winter. And I was shopping at thrift store for a costume and I saw this coat and it was exactly what I was looking for. And instead of buying a coat for, you know, $80 or $100 like I was going to, I got a new coat for $14.
Right.
And it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And knowing that you don't need that other coat, like no one's going to know, right? And actually, as popular as, now I can't remember who was saying thrift store, Macklemore. As popular as Macklemore made the thrift store experience, you might be proud.
Very true.
I am. That is a very relevant.
I love the millennial pop culture reference. This is excellent.
Well done.
Tyson, so what are your goals? What are your personal FIRE goals?
I mentioned I have two young children. They are 7 and almost 9. So I've got, you know, the prospect of their college coming up. My wife and I, we like to travel. So my goal is really to just pay for the big things that are coming up in a few years and to have a lifestyle where we can have significant travel. I'm able to, at this point, not lucky enough that I don't have to do a 9-to-5 day job. So for me, that choice, being able to choose, you know, retire early, that's something, the word retirement seems weird to me and I'm not sure what early is. But the notion of FI, of being financially independent, being able to make your own choices, that is what's key for me. I'm very, very close to being pretty much ultimately financially independent, meaning I can pick the things that I want to work on. I've got enough wiggle room that things can go wrong for a significant amount of time before they start going right again. I've got a good network of friends and coworkers that if I need to pick up some work, I can. So for me, that's what the journey is. Having choice, having freedom, having the ability to choose if and when I want to do things.
So if you're not working, you said that you stopped working at the consulting firm, what was that, last year?
Yeah, well, at the beginning of this year, yes.
Yeah, so if you're not working, how are you filling your time if you're not at a 9-to-5 job?
So primarily, my income is coming from On Trajectory, which is a tool that I developed and have made for myself, but hoping that it, you know, it's something that the FIRE community and people that are interested in personal finance in general, you know, will find useful. What year was this? It was 2013-ish, and my wife had just had our second child, and we were living in downtown Baltimore, Little Italy, great place to live if you're single. With two small children, it's a little bit different. and the realization that this small row home in downtown Baltimore is not going to cut it. You know, I wanted to have some green space for my kids. I wanted to be able to, really, I wanted to be able to tell them to go outside and play and not have to worry about them. And that particular impetus of needing to move, but at a point in my life where I had a 401k, I had an IRA, the wife had an IRA, had two small children, had one car payment, had a house payment, was going to change the house payment, was going to need a second car. Do I fund my retirement or do I fund the 529 plans for the kids? Do I buy a bigger house in hopes that the market goes up or do I buy a smaller house and bank the cash? You know, there was all of these variables, all of
these
complicated maths that needed to be done. I just outgrew spreadsheets and got to the point where, well, you know what? I'm a software engineer. I've been programming since I was 13 years old. I can make something better, a tool that's better than what the community has. And if I'm the only one that uses it, fine. At least I've got the tool that I want. If other people can use it, great. And that's how that happened.
Spoilers. It's awesome.
We love when people within the community build things to help us out. That's awesome. So really supportive of this. Can you tell us a little bit more about OnTrajectory? This was probably the first time listeners are being introduced to the product, unless they follow Gwen's blogs. I know Gwen has been using it for a while. Can you give us a brief rundown of what type of things it can do for you?
Sure. So OnTrajectory it's all about building a personal financial model, or as we call it, a money dummy. So your money dummy is something that you stand up and you flesh out. And if it falls down, you know you need to put more stuffing in it. With your money dummy, you can try to, you know, break its arm by buying a boat. You can try to kick it by buying a new car. I mean, you know, the metaphor is it's a personal financial model that you can do what-if scenarios. You can put a lot of questions into it and see the results. The reason that people are probably thinking, oh, well, there's tons of these tools around. I can go to any website and just type in financial calculator or retirement calculator or something like that. But what those tools do, you know, they let you put in a couple of variables and spits out a result, tells you, oh, you need $2 million to retire or something like that. Or you've got some other tools that are a little bit more configurable, like FireCalc or CFireSim. And those are real nice. You know, if you want to kind of get a point in time look at where I'm heading and the chances, you know, the percentage of success calculations that they're going to give you. But if you really want a tool that's going to grow with you over time, let you do things like comparing contributions to your 529 plan versus your 401k, if you want to postulate buying a house and including the equity in your home as it grows over time, and making a, like I said, a money dummy that you can stand up, building a financial model that is 40, 50, 60 years long, then you need something sophisticated. Now, if you've got a financial advisor, advisors have access to tools like Money Guide Pro or eMoney Advisor or Right Capital, but those are tools that cost literally hundreds of dollars per month to use. And you generally need to be a financial advisor to even understand how to use them. OnTrajectory is consumer facing. It's all about drawing big, pretty graphs and keeping that graph in front of you. A lot of other tools let you put in numbers and it shows you numbers and the visual component is sort of lost. We're all about visualizing, letting you see your future, becoming your own fortune teller. So, I mean, that's what OnTrajectory is. That's what it does. And we do include some sophisticated calculations that other tools that the professionals use, like we calculate your required minimum distributions at age 70. So if you've got a 401k or you've got a traditional IRA, we calculate all that stuff out and show the financial impact. We even let you do Roth conversions. If you've got a 401k and you know you're going to be quitting your job and should I convert to a Roth or not, you can do all that in OnTrajectory.
When you were describing it, I was thinking like a voodoo dummy. I'm like, this is a five voodoo dummy. You can prop it up. You can cut its arm off. I was like, what are we doing? That's awesome. Gwen, why don't you share your experience with it?
Yeah. So I was just going to say that I like comparing it to a Weeble Wobble. You know, Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down.
It's another good one.
Yeah. So yeah, I've used OnTrajectory for, gosh, I don't even know, like what, like 3 years now, Tyson? Something like that. And when I was still working my 9-to-5 job and I had a 401k and all these different scenarios, it is the best thing out there to model out some potential scenarios that could happen. What happens if I get an inheritance when I'm 80? You know, what happens if I want to take out X amount of money from my 401k, but not the other ones? You know, like, so you can go really in depth and create these detailed scenarios that tell you if you're going to have a good chance of succeeding or not. And you can't get that level of granular detail in any other tool.
Thanks, Gwen.
I don't think any other tool is necessarily built for the FIRE community, because I know whenever I use, I think it was Fidelity's Visualizer or whatever, it keeps thinking that I'm going to retire at a normal retirement age. So it's like, you're right on track, or you're exceeding your target. And it's like, nah, like, you don't get what's going on here. That's not happening.
Why is the lowest age 55?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I'm assuming, Tyson, that you built this with the financial independence use cases in mind because you are from the community.
That's right. In fact, the tool exists specifically to answer one question. What year can Tyson Koska stop working? I mean, that's really
people like that.
That is all on the trajectory was written for.
I feel like you should just lead with that because that is like so clear. I love that. And that is what we're all about here. So, okay, Gwen, you have access to the tool, right? You should maybe go through and put up a YouTube video on our channel so people can see it.
Yeah, I can probably do that. I'm just trying to think of like all the information in there and if it like
is sensitive.
Nothing is sensitive because I put it out on my blog anyway and people know my last name now. So that's not a real worry. So,
okay. I love how I'm tasking you. I'm sorry, Gwen.
If you wanted some visuals of like some sample scenarios that are kind of universally applicable, I can supply you with whatever you need.
Oh, that's a good thing too. Yeah.
I think that would be helpful because I'm sure when people are listening, they're wanting to see it. And I just quickly Googled it on YouTube and I didn't see anything. So I would love to put something up there. Cool. All right. Well, Tyson, do you have any stories of people who have used it or any kind of like feedback you've gotten from people?
Oh, sure. Sure. Tons, actually. So our community, there is a certain kind of person that is into numbers. And there's a lot of folks in the FIRE community who still don't love spreadsheets. Now, that's alien to me. Of course, I love spreadsheets. But there are folks that really, you know, they adopt a good money mindset. They make the right choices. They want to know, you know, they've got financial independence goals and they're following the steps to get there. But they're still not super number oriented. Now, in our community, the folks that are super, like Gwen wrote a great article about us. You know, what if CFIRE, Sim, and Excel had a love child or something? I can't remember exactly the title.
That was pretty much the title, yeah.
Yeah. But the people that do understand it and do realize that no other tools do this stuff, they get really passionate and they write us. So we have a compliments folder and we've got, a bunch of unsolicited compliments. If you register and you use our free trial, we're going to hit you with them. But we get some really funny ones. I've got a guy that wrote me and said, On Trajectory has given me the confidence to know when I can retire, but now what I'm going to decide to do is buy a boat and see how long I can sail it before I have to come back to land. And I'm like, wow, this guy is now making serious life changes based on the vision that On Trajectory is able to give. I mean, we are literally changing people's lives. And so we've, you know, we do have a, as I said, if you're a trial user, you're going to see these blurbs pop up. But the guy who's buying a boat, that was the one that always sticks with me.
That's really cool. I love that. So I'm looking right now. You have a 14-day free trial. No credit card needed to sign up. So just sign up with your name, email address, and you can try it out.
Right. And then what we do is we bother you every day. So for the 14 days, on the first day, there's two ways to get started with the tool. You can either kind of just jump in there, or you can go through this guided entry situation where you answer kind of more granular questions. So day one, you get an email that talks about that. Day two, some tips for modeling income. Day three, some tips for modeling expenses. Day four, some tips for setting up your accounts. So we do this for 14 days. About half of them have accompanying videos called the Mastering On Trajectory tutorial series out on YouTube. You'll get links to those. So for that 14 days, we really try to do everything we can to help you make a good, solid money dummy or Weeble Wobble.
Okay, cool. And I'm looking now at the subscription and $7 per month is super reasonable. So that is great. Price is right.
Yeah, it's $7 per month, but it's $63 per year. So that's a 25% discount if you go with the annual price.
Whoa, look at that.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. I think, can you provide us a link and we'll include that in the show notes?
Yes, I'll give you a link for the show notes.
Okay, awesome. All right, thanks, Tyson. We're ready for the final two. Gwen, I'll have you kick it off.
Final two. All right, Tyson, if people would like to learn more about On Trajectory or get in touch with you personally, how can they do so?
Just go to ontrajectory.com. Easy to email us, or you can always email me personally, tyson.koska@ontrajectory.com.
And of course, we'll put that in the show notes as well. All right, Jay, you want to ask the final question?
Yes. Tyson, what is your absolute wildest dream?
My wildest dream is being able to wake up and be completely self-directed for the entire day, to choose what I want to do, to go where I want to go, and not have the pressure of someone else telling me what I have to do.
Sounds pretty good.
Sounds like the life.
Yeah, you can't compete. That one was extremely reasonable, wildest dream. Love it.
I like x-ray vision or anything, but that's okay.
Yeah, but it was good. It was legit. Well, thank you, Tyson, so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Very happy to be here, and thanks for a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.